Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And, you know, we're learning so much on Garden Talk about how to channel your ideas and make them doable for your gardens. And we're going to be continuing with that today and expanding on it quite a bit, I think, from previous shows. Our guest today, the curator of horticulture from the Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh with us. Sheetha Glaske is helping, will help you take the inspiration you see in perhaps botanical gardens and make them your own. So maybe you carry memories of gardens or plants and you want to try and move those plants or move those ideas to your own garden. Maybe you've thought a little bit, or maybe you haven't thought much about what influences the way you make your plantings. Once you get an idea that you can sort of picture in your head, how do you carry that through and make it happen? Well, if you're like me and have a lot of trouble with that, you have come to the right place, because Sheetha, I think, can help answer those questions for you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, she can answer your flower and plant questions as we move along today. Sheetha Glaske, welcome.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm glad to be here.
You haven't been a Garden Talk guest before, so let's take a bit of time to learn more about you. How did you become a horticulturist?
Well, so I grew up on the western part of Wisconsin on a dairy farm, and my mom always drugged me to those garden centers and nurseries, and I was like, oh, I think there was like maybe ice cream involved. Maybe that's why I went. So I really didn't start that way, but I went to college at UW-River Falls and went undecided, and I just started taking some classes that I thought might be interesting, and the horticulture professors really kind of drugged me into it. and ever since then, you know, I've kind of been hooked, you know, the science and the art part of it. So I worked at Old World of Wisconsin for a little bit, growing vegetables. If you've never been there, that's an amazing place.
Yeah.
And then I've been at the Payne Art Center and Gardens for 20 years.
Wow. How'd you find your way to Payne?
Well, my husband had a job in the Fox Valley, and with a horticulture degree, I decided to search out. And that was one of my top picks. So luckily, I got you know, an interview and hired.
Well, for people who haven't visited Payne Art Center and Gardens, this is an absolutely amazing place. And you know, before we get into our plant calls and stuff, I really want you to let people know about what that garden is all about. And I hope they go to the website to take a look at the castle.
Yeah, it is a castle right here in Oshkosh.
Yeah, and it's like 30,000 square feet or something. And then, what, 20 gardens?
So, yeah, so we have an English-style mansion, 30,000 square feet. And inside we have period furniture, and then a collection of exhibitions that travel. And then the outside, we have 4 acres of gardens.
So. Yeah, they're really beautiful. If you get a look at them, and I'm going to cue into my listeners who accompanied me on a trip to England to see the gardens of England few years back now, but we had so much fun. But really, I guess you don't have to go to England to see the English gardens, do you?
No, that's right. Now, in those 4 acres, we have 20 different themed gardens that you can walk through. And so we have like an herb garden, a shade garden, and the list goes on for 20 acre gardens.
Yeah, so we'll maybe talk more about some of those specific gardens. But what about I think it's an interesting story of the Paynes, the Payne family, the husband and wife,
yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Payne.
Nathan and Jesse Payne, and they were the lumber industry.
So that's where they made all the money.
Right. So they're second generation, and so they made a lot of their money from the hollow doors. You know, less cost to ship them. But we had the Fox River right next to us, so they kind of send the logs down. And this was one of their homes, and the funny thing is that they built this home, but never got a chance to live in it. They both passed away before they lived in it, and they never had any children. So It was kind of...
It went to the city of Oshkosh, essentially, then.
It went to a nonprofit organization, and so we were all self-supportive, and luckily, they left that legacy to us. It's a real gem.
It is absolutely gorgeous, and so hollow core doors.
I know, right? Who would have thought? Shipping?
How long did it take to make that castle? Do you know offhand?
Well, it started in the 30s and got done. It stopped, slowed down during the Depression, and then we opened to the public in 1948.
So it took a few years to get that place done.
Yeah, no. Well, if you ever been inside, you would know what took it so long. There's so much detail. Mr. Payne is really big on quality, and so everything is done top notch there.
How many fireplaces?
Well, we have 7 fireplaces. we have only 2 bedrooms. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Payne always intended that this place be open to the public because they were a collector of art. And so they're probably one of the finest art collectors around. So you'll see art if you're interested.
Beautiful art.
Yeah, that you won't see other places.
And then you go outside and view the artistic beauty of the gardens.
I know. I'm so lucky. You get to work with the traditional art and then the garden art. So yeah, we enjoy working in the gardens, and of course gardens are always changing and evolving, and that's what we enjoy doing.
Well, we'll give our listeners a chance to join in with their questions. Maybe it's about the gardens, or maybe it's about specific plants that you remember or like or want to know some more about. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And if you've got a garden or plant photo you want to send in, please email it to us. Again, at ideas@wpr.org. Let's try a call. Ann in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I remember a shrub my parents had that was, the leaves were green with a dark red over them. And it was the ends of the branches formed like a flower cluster. And when you rubbed those leaves, it smelled like pineapples. And someone thought it might be sweet shrub, but I've looked at pictures. That's not it. The house and the gardens are long gone now, so I have no idea what this plant was, but I would sure like to find another one.
So, and those red, and the red color, was that just in the, was that in the fall, or was it a part of the plant at all times?
Well, I was a kid, so I don't really remember, but I believe it was all the time. I just remember being so intrigued by crushing those, or rubbing those leaves and smelling that pineapple. It smelled exactly like fresh pineapple.
So, you know, one idea, herbs. Do you think it could be a perennial herb that overwinters? And, you know, there's that sage called pineapple sage that gets about 3 feet tall that overwinters. Or do you think it's more of a woody shrub?
I think it was more of a woody shrub, but I've smelled pineapple sage at garden stores and not the same. It didn't ring a bell with me. I don't remember that being red either, but...
Tell you what, you have stumped us here temporarily, I think.
No? Yeah, if you have pictures, man, with pictures.
This exact question and stumped the other lady too.
Well, I tell you what, there are a lot of people listening who may have some ideas about that. If you have an idea about that shrub that Ann is talking about, a dark red with some dark red colors, I wonder if that's in the fall, but maybe not.
Maybe. I don't remember. I remember that in the summertime, but it could have just been a warm fall day.
That could have been. Well, tell you what, somebody's...
I'd know.
Somebody's liable to call in with a guess or a suggestion, and that might tickle our minds, too, as we move along. Ann, stay listening. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have... Kara in Delafield, Wisconsin, with a question. Hi, Kara.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a question about a fig tree. We brought one up from Arizona this summer, and it was doing great in the summer and growing. But once we brought it downstairs in our basement over the winter and the temperatures dropping, it keeps losing its leaves and looks like it's not doing so good.
Yeah, you know, we actually grow figs in our gardens for like just temporary annual displays. Mm-hmm. And so they are really good growers in the gardens. But what we do is you can definitely bring that in just to your garage. And the leaves will fall off.
Yeah.
But then you bring it back out in the spring of the year, and it just starts budding itself out. It's a really hardy plant.
Is it, how often do you, say, water it in the wintertime?
Well, I hardly ever watered mine that I put in the garage, and it really overwintered well. It's a grower.
And that garage gets pretty cold?
It does. It does. It's an insulated garage, but it gets really cold, and if you just keep it, you know, in the south there are trees.
Yeah.
And they're pretty aggressive trees.
If it was me, I'd put it on a piece of wood. I'd put the pot on a piece of wood so that the cold would not transfer from the floor.
Yeah, no, that might be good. That might be, well, good.
So, Kara, you're probably okay.
Yeah. You know, yeah. If you just use it as your summer display and bring it back out.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we got Richard at Eagle, Wisconsin, with something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Richard.
Hello. First, Larry, let me just quickly say that I've recently increased my monthly donation from $15 to $20 a month for this show and other shows. So
thank you.
We thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have a question. I have as I'm speaking right now, I'm looking at an approximately 8-foot-tall trumpet vine.
Yep.
And it fed a good half dozen hummingbirds during the this past spring, summer, and early fall. And I went out and measured it, and I've got approximately 5 pods. They look like large pea pods hanging from it. The largest one I measured at actually 14 inches long, and I would like to propagate the shrubs. So I'd like to know if the pod can be directly buried in the ground, if there's seeds inside that I could take out and plant, and I just don't know what to do. So that's my question.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Well, you know, trumpet vines are very pretty, and those hummingbirds love them.
Yeah.
And the colors on them are so intense, too. So I think what I would do is I would just collect those seeds, and I think I would store them. I would look at to see if you need to be scratching them, and then to see if they need some cold treatment. Some of those seeds need cold treatments. And then I would just, in the spring of the year, plant them in the ground.
So you'd open up the pods, get the seeds out.
I would, yeah. And a little research on that would be good, because then you would know if it needs, what cold treatment it needs, if it needs some scratching, some moisture.
Scarification, I think
right,
it's called.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
All right, so there you go. Give that a try, and, you know, you could do a little experimenting, too, while you're at it, Richard. You might just leave... Since you've got a few, you might take one and just leave the seeds in the pot over winter, stick it outside, let it just take that that cold temperature and see what happens with those, and try the scarification with the others.
Yeah, that's great. You have quite a few to work with.
Yeah, you got a lot to work with, so give it a shot. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We are talking today with Sheila Glaske. She is the curator of horticulture at Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. And I really highly encourage you to go online, just Google in Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. It's going to pop up, and you're going to be just amazed at what you see when you do that. And, of course, she's here to answer your questions, so I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got some design questions, too. How do you make your garden look better? Love to hear those questions, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and email us at ideas@wpr.org. Kate Archer Kent, our producer, Natalie Guyette, our on-air producer today, Dave Potratz, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Talking today with Sheila Glaske on this edition of Garden Talk, curator of horticulture at Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Where do you find inspiration for what you plant? Do you have a special plant or tree that's dedicated to a loved one? Maybe. Have you had success in recreating ideas you see at botanical gardens, maybe like the Payne Art Center and Gardens? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us with your photos and or questions at ideas@wpr.org. Sheila, how does somebody gain inspiration, or how do you gain inspiration for the things that you do in the gardens?
Well, you know, when you work in a public garden, there's a couple challenges. One would be the weather, which you can't control. And the other one is to try to invent yourself every year and try to create something that people haven't seen before. Like, kind of like, oh, I've never thought about that. So I'm always searching for inspiration. And I developed some techniques along the way and how I kind of go about designing some of my gardens.
Okay. What do you do?
Well, you know, I think color is inspiring to most.
Yeah.
They go to a garden center. They see something they like as far as the color, and they need it. They're not quite sure where they're going to put it, but they need it. So color is very inspirational. And so I work off of color too. Like, so we have these large banners that hang from the front of the mansion in the show or exhibition for the summer. And I really get inspired by the colors of those banners and try to incorporate some of those colors into our gardens. And another thing I do is, you know, if you ever look at your closet and look at the colors in your closet, those are the colors that are your favorite, right? And so you kind of, some fabric can be a really big inspiration. And sometimes one time I took a slash of fabric, and I actually designed a garden bed based on the colors of that bed. So color color is a big motivator, really. And you know, I also try to incorporate some vegetables into my gardens because, you know, they're small spaces and people want to incorporate these spaces and get production from them or yields. And so I use a lot of vegetables, and not only because of the form of the vegetables, but also the color. So like eggplant, for instance, that purple.
Yeah,
is
that pops out at you.
I know, right? Against that green. And so that's a really good grower. But leeks for vegetables, that blue color makes a nice statement, a nice spike. And so, and it's a really easy grower. And so you just plant it in the ground and you have that blue contrast with the green. Now, parsley is another color I use. That green, it's hard to find that mounding shape of parsley. So I use that in a lot of edging.
Oh.
So then I get inspired by vegetables and their colors and their forms.
So now I'm thinking about my own closet, and there's a lot of black in there. There's blue in there.
It doesn't mean you have a black thumb, Larry.
So, black. What would I do with black?
Well, let's see. There's a lot of black grasses that are coming out right now. The seed pods of a lot of plants are black.
Ah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, in our parking lot, I kind of wanted to have a little surprise. So I planted rhubarb. You ever thought about planting a rhubarb as an ornamental?
No, I haven't.
The red stems, large leaves.
Oh, sure.
I keep it deadheaded all the time, so then it creates that big mound. Yeah, it's really fun.
You're full of good ideas, aren't you?
Well, we're just starting, Larry.
Well, let's take some more calls here. Enough about me. Dan and Marsh McFarland, what about you? What have you got in mind for us?
So, thanks for the show. Great show. I have a soil question, but before that, I just wanted to add to your inspiration discussion. My inspiration for gardening comes from childhood memories on my grandparents' farm and in my mom's yard, and that's how I get inspiration. I just wanted to share
nice.
That.
That's very excellent. Nice, yeah.
But you had a question about soil.
Sure. I had my soil tested in my vegetable garden, and it's low on potassium, and I have plenty of phosphorus, and maybe just a hint of nitrogen is needed. And if I add some chicken manure or some other kind of manure, I could be adding, you know, more nitrogen and phosphorus. Can you have too much of those things?
Well, you can have too much phosphorus for sure.
Yeah. You know, if there's one thing that's the most important in gardening, it's soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the soil makeup, it's kind of interesting because we have gardens that have been around for a long time that really have lots of good nutrients and lots of good micronutrients. And then we have a new gardens that we just put in, and they have chemically suggested soil, but it doesn't, they don't grow plants as well as the ones that we've been working on for a long time. So, you know, I think
Dan's probably looking at long-term, maybe some long-term use here. I mean, it's pretty easy to find this day and age. In fact, it's illegal in some communities to sell phosphorus fertilizer as part of in city situations because of the runoff. So there's a lot of fertilizers you can actually buy now that are nitrogen and potassium. So there's that, but you can build a soil organically as well, and maybe that's a way to go. What do you think?
Well, I absolutely believe in the organic soil buildup. We actually chop all of our leaves and put them back into the garden, and we also use composted sheep manure. It's mm-hmm. been growing really well for us. One thing you got to worry about with manure is if their salts are too high.
But you like composted sheep manure.
Oh, yeah, that's what we kind of use just because it's available and it's composted for 3 years.
Whoa.
So it's kind of like gold. It's gold to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe think about that, Dan. Composted sheep manure, perhaps, if you have available. Again, something that's been composted for a couple of years. You can often purchase that at garden centers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I'd go long term on that.
I would too. I think it's important. Yeah. It's the most important part of your gardening.
Dan, thank you. Appreciate the call very much. And let's go to Brittany in Spring Grove, Wisconsin. Hi, Brittany.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a avocado tree that my daughter planted from a seed back in high school. So it's been over 10 years. We bring it in every winter and put it back out in the summer, except it's getting quite large. Last year I got a new shoot coming up, so now I have almost two trees growing in the same pot. Can I repot it this time of year? How much can I cut it back? Will it ever grow avocados up here in Wisconsin or Illinois?
Brittany, those are all very good questions. I don't think I've ever grown an avocado.
I have. I've done it. I did it as a kid and I tried it a couple times as an adult, but I sure as the heck, Brittany, ever got one for kept one for 10 years. That's pretty darn good.
That is impressive. I think I would divide the little one.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? Yeah, yeah. Why not? Why not? And to do it now, I don't know. I think I would wait until the spring.
I would too.
Yeah, I think I would split it in the spring and give it a fair chance with the amount of light that's outside.
And I think you know what it looks like once you bring it in, Brittany. I'm pretty sure it's losing its leaves, a lot of its leaves.
It does. It tends to lose a good number of them, but not all. I mean, it tastes pretty good.
Yeah. So I guess I don't think you're ever going to get an avocado.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, unlike limes or lemons, my lime tree has got, I think, 10 limes on it right now. That I'm waiting to pluck one at a time as they're all in various sizes. But for avocado, I don't think you're going to, unless somebody can call in and tell me that they actually got an avocado.
Well, Brittany,
one of their avocado trees.
I think you got to look at it like it's just a nice texture in your garden or next nice texture in your pots. You know, combine it with some other elements, and I think it'd be really pretty.
How do you put it when you place it back outside? Do you just stick it anywhere, or do you kind of have a way to sort of highlight it or show it off amongst?
No, it stays. It's in a pot, and we just lug it outside and put it on the front porch. Mm-hmm. It faces east, so it's a little bit protected. It does not like the direct sun. It doesn't like a lot of sun.
Yeah.
Which seems strange, but we've kind of learned where it likes to be in the summer, and it's just kind of something to talk about. It's the avocado that we grew when my daughter was in high school. It's over 10 years old. So.
Yeah, that's wonderful. How often have you changed the pot?
A number of times. Right now, my problem is that it's taller than my ceiling, so it's kind of bent over. It grew that much this year. Yeah. So I usually will get a bigger pot, a bigger around and a little bit shorter so that I can get a couple more inches in the house.
There you go. Well, I have to tell you, I had a cactus once that that was about 15 feet in my house, but I had a spot where actually I could put it, and so I loved that cactus, and I miss it now.
Yeah, you get so attached to those plants, right? They're not your children. Or
no.
Your pets, but you do get attached to all those, especially
yeah,
10 years. That's
kind
a long
of
time.
Sort of like Brittany. That cactus was only a couple feet tall when I got it, and had it a long, long time, and it grew. Brittany, thanks. Do that. Separate those out in spring, and I think the young one will probably do fine. Thank you. Let's go to Chris in Adams next. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I have a plant that I just stumbled upon inadvertently, and it adds a lot of interest to the fall garden, and it's also really great for the birds, and it's called crimson millet. It grows 2 to 2.5 feet tall, and it has real impressive leaves that are sort of like a corn leaf shape, and they're bright red. And then it sends up the seed stalk that's black, and the birds just love it. Maybe you could just go into a little bit of a discussion about planting things for the winter, overwintering birds stuff.
All right.
Yeah, you know, why do we like birds, right? Mm-hmm. Why do we like flags? It's because they have that movement and motion. So definitely to attract birds is something that everybody's interested in their garden. We've grown millet before at the Paine, and it to overwinter it really doesn't, at least the annual millet. Mm-hmm. But we do see a lot of bird action on it at this time of year. The millet actually is kind of peters out around this time of year.
But there's a black color in there.
Yeah, that's right. Mix it with something really fun, and you can have like a fuchsia pink. Oof.
Crimson millet, but crimson millet, that may be hardier than just the standard
annual millet.
Yeah, the annual millet. So
yeah, you know, we're seeing a lot of hummingbirds and a lot of birds that are now collecting a lot of the seeds. You know, especially those Wisconsin native ones, they seem to go towards those seeds.
And, such as?
Well, so we have like the echinaceas that are in mm-hmm. the natives. They are actually on those. And then the Veronicas, they're kind of all over those. I think, you know, if you leave a lot of those up for the winter, you'll be surprised what comes to your plants.
So just leave them there. Yeah.
I would. You know, I kind of look at winter interest and see if it's good to leave them up or cut them down. But birds are definitely important in your garden.
Yeah. Thank you again for that call. Appreciate it. So those are plants that you would consider, I mean, they're going to be fine all summer, but they provide some winter interest, and then they also provide seeds for other birds.
No, right. Birds are large in the garden.
Let's go to Ellen in Waupun. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. And I wanted to comment on the gardens. We were there this summer, actually in September, for the Tiffany glass display, and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the plantings that were near the entrance to the Paine, on the left as you go in, I have a picture in front of me that has the tall, dark grasses. I'd like to know which ones they are. And then there looks to be like a green oak-shaped leaf below it. What would that plant be?
Well, Ellen, you guys, Larry, you have the nicest listeners.
I know. They're great, aren't they?
Yeah, Ellen, thank you. And thank you for visiting the Paine. So that grass that you're looking at is a Pennisetum. And that it actually grew about 5 or 6 feet tall. You know, they're breeding mm-hmm. a lot of the Pennisetums, but this one is First Night.
And First Night.
Yeah, and it's one of the newer ones.
Is it
ones.
First Night as in K-N-I, or
right.
is night like night and day?
Nope, it's K-N. So oh. It's like a royal family. There's a lot of princesses. But this is one of the darkest and tallest of all the Pennisetums. And so I didn't expect it to be that tall because it's my first time growing it, but it really was a statement in the garden. And it is black, Larry.
Especially in front of a structure like that one with 30,000 square foot castle you got there.
That's right. It's tall. We got to kind of balance that out. Yeah. So that's what that grass, and it's an annual grass. And when we dug it out this fall, I thought it was going to have roots down to China, but it dug out pretty well. But it's a really good grower.
You dug it out, and then where do you put it?
Well, so what we do is we dig out all of our annuals for the season, and then we plant tulip bulbs. We plant over 10,000 tulip bulbs in the fall here, and so that there's a spring showcase.
I got you, but could you leave them in the?
They won't overwinter. They will not. They will not overwinter. I don't know. I've never tried them in a garage, or as a house plant, but.
So Ellen was talking about another plant that was growing near or next to the tall dark grasses with an oak-shaped leaf.
Yeah, you know what that was, Ellen? And that is a fig tree. Funny thing. Yeah, right? Right? And so I kind of put that in as a surprise. So people probably wouldn't see figs growing in their garden. But it is actually a fig tree, and we get them in just like 4.5-inch pots. And we put them in, and we actually get figs that produce.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a nice element because you get that kind of a maple leaf. It has a odd shape to it. And so it questions people what it actually is.
So you get it at 4 inches. Ellen was there in September. How big were they at that point?
Well, actually, they're not fast growers.
Yeah.
And so we probably put on about 7-8 inches. So
there you go, Ellen. Does that help out?
Very much. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, lots of callers. Let's go to Mark in Richland Center next. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Larry, you mentioned the cactus earlier, but are there cactus or low water type plants that one will be able to grow in this territory this far north? I excavated along the house and backfilled with gravel. So it's going to be very low water, hopefully, because I'm tired of the water coming into the house.
Yeah.
And so I backfilled maybe as much as 4 to 8 feet out from the house with just gravel with a drain tile beneath that. So the water availability for anything growing there is going to be very limited. And I'm just wondering what kind of plants I might grow along there, and I don't really want them to get very tall. Are there low-growing? Maybe sedums or something like that are the choice, but maybe your guest could offer some choices.
Yeah, maybe there are native cactus in Wisconsin.
Yeah, the prickly pear.
Prickly pears are something that actually would survive the winter. I mean, they live through the winter, so that would be one plant. I'd definitely think about those.
Yeah, you know, water is kind of crucial, so it's kind of a tough spot to be in.
The other, you might, just off the top of my head, are there some, I don't know if you do prairie plants very much, but there are some prairie plants, Sheila, that do fine without a lot of water.
No, that's true. Their roots go down so deep, and so they find water sources other places other than the shallow elements. So I would look into prairie plants. I would also look into grasses. And if it's a shady area, you know, hostas are pretty durable too.
Yeah, they'll live. I've got some that lived.
Hard to kill them.
Yeah, you can hardly kill them. So, there are some really protractive hostas out there as well that some of them even do well in direct sun, but most of them like a little shade.
Yeah, and then the sedums would be okay. You know, something that's more of a succulent, you know, that holds water in its leaves usually do better in dry conditions. But I think no matter what it is, you're still going to have to water it on a regular basis.
Probably a little bit of water there. I mean, it's certainly to get things going, Mark, and then let those roots get down. But prickly pears are going to live on...
Yeah, they're growers.
they're pretty darn hardy. So you've got a combination of 4 or 5 things that Sheila and I guess I threw one in too mentioned, and you could probably design a nice little look.
I think so too. Yeah, you know, just repeat the patterns, you know, or bring some colors back from your house back into the garden.
So you'd set maybe along the house. You might set a. A setting that might be, 5 feet, 6 to 8 feet And then you could repeat that?
Yeah, you know,
6-8 feet?
I think what your mind says is that it needs to see something similar or repeating. And so even though if you don't know what it is, mm-hmm. your mind just repeats mm-hmm. patterns, and you're like, okay, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. So repeating is something I use a lot in elements, and not only form, but color.
Ah. That help you, Mark?
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, oh, let's go to Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in an area where we have a little prairie down below our big building, and we're all allowed to plant in there, and I'd like to plant wildflowers in there, but this big grass has taken over part of it. And it's not pretty grass. It's ugly.
Ah.
It doesn't have a lot of seeds on it. I don't see any value in it, but I don't know how to get rid of it.
Do you have? Is it wet? Is the area wet?
No. It's clay.
Okay. Okay.
Could be anything. It might not be a native
right.
Plant. That's a hard one. If you could... If you could get a photo or a picture, or say a long shot and then a close-up shot of it, and send it in, probably, I'm trying to think, probably even the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic would be able to take a look at it, identify it, and or even your county horticulture agent, your county ag or horticulture agent could probably take a look at it and tell you what you would need to do to eliminate it. My guess is that it grows by underground
rhizomes.
Yeah, and so it's going to be difficult to get rid of, to be perfectly honest.
And I think you need to get rid of it before you start putting your prairie plants in. And there's going to be a little more competition. And if it's that massive of grass planting, there it's kind of a grower, aggressive. Yeah. And so I think in order to be successful at wildflowers, I think you're going to have to first take care of that grass and figure out what it is and how it grows.
Yeah, you need to find out what it is and how it grows. And I think probably your county ag or horticulture agent, or maybe even sending one into our Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW, photos at least, they can probably tell you a little bit more about it, even though it's obviously not diseased at the moment, they could identify the plants. But the county agent would certainly almost for sure know. So good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Sheila Glaske is the curator of horticulture at Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. Our guest on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Sheila Glaske. She is the curator of horticulture at Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. Great to have her along. It's her first time on Garden Talk, so always fun to get new voices and new people into the show on Fridays. So where do you find inspiration for your landscape? Do you have some plant questions about that? Do you have some inspiration questions? Give a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Bonnie emailed to say that you can actually use those avocado leaves in cooking. It's a common ingredient in Mexican cooking and recipes, from an earlier caller who had a comment about that. Well, Lyle in Montello has a question for you or a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Lyle.
Hi, Larry. I love your show. And Sheila, I'm super jealous of your job.
Thanks.
I was calling about the gentleman a little while ago that had a problem with his foundation not being able to put plants there because it's too dry.
Yeah.
My brother built a house, and he's got the same issue where it's super dry up against the foundation of the house. And what he did is he took the pots from large, like, tree pots, buried them in the ground, filled them with dirt, and then just planted the plants in those. And it worked out pretty well. Plus, he doesn't have any issues with the water up against his house that way. So I don't know if that'd work for that guy, but it works for my brother anyway.
Oh, that's maybe spread some rock or something over the top.
Yeah, so you don't see them.
There, you know what the best part of gardening is? Is that you're always learning.
Yeah.
And these colors. I mean, everybody has, no matter how much you know, you're always learning.
That's a great idea.
Well, there's a way.
Yeah. Thank you, Lyle. I love that idea. That's a great idea. So a nice large pot or a set of pots, cover them up and a little bit with some gravel or whatever, and there you go. And you can water your heart's content. All right, on to Barry in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
Good. I'm calling about the lady with the avocado tree. I'm no expert, but I lived in San Diego a long time, and I was a landscaper. And avocado tree flowers have both male and female parts. They're only open for 2 days in the spring. The female part opens one day and the male the next day. So it's very difficult for a single avocado tree to fertilize itself. Mm. You'll almost never get fruit off of a tree alone.
You know, that is really interesting. I wondered why that was the case. I suppose if you really could watch it, you could probably... So the male opens... Does the male open first or the female?
The female opens first.
Oh, of
and
course.
And I'll wait for about... Just for a few hours, 2, 3, 4 hours, and then it closes, and that's that. So there needs to be a male out there floating around in order to have a little chin wag with her if you're
yeah.
going to have fruit.
Well, and if the male opened first, you could collect from the male and then with a Q-tip or whatever and then transfer it over to the female flower. But well, you'd have to know that.
I am not by any means an expert on this, but it may be that if you watched your tree, I don't think they all flower on exactly the same day. If you watched the flower and saw the female open and then collect the pollen off of the male and, as you say, with a Q-tip, put it on another female that opens that day or the next day, it might make it work.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I'm sure there are fruit growers that can tell you for sure.
Barry, thank you. That was great. I really appreciate that call. Oh, man, I learn a lot on Garden Talk, my golly, every single Friday and Saturday, as a matter of fact. Cheryl in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I had a question about, once again, I love trumpeters, and my younger sister keeps a whole big vine on her patio above her table on her deck. And I was thinking about getting some over into my yard. How do I go about getting those repotted or replanted where they would grow in my yard?
Is she talking about trumpet vines?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what I would do is in the spring of the year, if you can divide hers and take a section of it over to your yard.
That was the reason why you couldn't do that. You couldn't do that.
They actually have a trellis to grow those, or they grow up the side of her house?
Yeah, it depends on what you've got for a house. They should grow up the side. A trellis is awfully nice, though, if you can put a trellis in next to or
work.
Have the plant next to a trellis.
Yeah, and they're really woody, too. So I don't know. I would probably look up the variety and buy it new and stick it into your garden.
Yeah, you want. Yeah, and... You know, there's some, you know, ivy and plants like that cling to the sides of homes can do some damage to the home as well. If you don't care, well, what's the difference? But if you do, maybe you're going to move or something and you're going to sell the place, you might want them on a trellis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. But no problem. And you would say, just go out and buy a new one.
I would, yeah. They're such a fast grower.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's so many pretty colors out there that you can kind of coordinate your landscaping with the colors. And
they're not overly expensive either.
Yeah, unless there's sentimental value to you to get that one. But, yeah, there's a lot of really pretty colors of trumpet vines.
Yeah. So there you go, Cheryl. Thank you very much for calling. And Mary in New Holstein, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a guest house in New Holstein, and I'm looking at completely redoing the landscape. I have a split rail fence along one lot line, and then I have the south side of the house that I would like to put in an edible garden. I'd like it to look landscapist, English garden kind of, but I'd like the plants to be edible. I'd like to have height and texture and color, and maybe I'm dreaming, but...
No, no, this sounds all very pretty. I like it. I can see it in my head already.
All right, so what's your advice then, Sheila?
Yeah, you know what I would do is how I kind of research some of those items. So, I go on the Google and I type in just words that on the Google, and then I push images. And I work a lot off of images, and I collect images from different pictures. So you can kind of get some really good ideas. So you would say like, oh, I like the way that kind of repeats. I like the way the height is on there. And so... just repeating patterns is kind of huge, and repeating forms in your garden. So, like for example, not using herbs or vegetables, but using flowers. Zinnias have that round head on them, and if you could repeat that form in a marigold, and so that's what makes it pretty, I think. And pulling colors from around the area. If your house has some colors on it, pull them down. Repeat colors. And just do some research on the science part of it. So what can grow in that area? What kind of, you have the art section, and then you have the science, and trying to combine those two. But
and she's looking for edible plants.
Yeah, right. So you know, some of those herbs that you can incorporate into the plantings are perennials. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a nice start. You know, I use sage a lot in my gardens, and that over winters. And it has that really pretty, there's greens and purples. So sage is a good one. And it will hold the planting down. But then if you're talking about edibles, a lot of those are only seasonal. So only annual plantings. So you would have to replant a lot of those every year for edibles. But now tomatoes would, if it's a hot area, would be really, really good on the south side. But some of those, as the season ends, the plants kind of go down too. So it's a matter of combining the textures, depending on how everything grows. And maybe some really pretty trellises in there would be pretty.
And you can even trellis some of the vines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I would suggest just doing some Google searches and just type in some keywords into the Google, push your images, and see what kind of images come up. And then, you know, maybe you print them off, you put them on a bulletin board, you know, you write little notes saying, I really like the way that climbs, I really like the color of that, and just start collecting pictures. And I think for me, I'm pretty visual, so pictures say 1,000 words. So that's what my suggestion would be, is just start gathering images that you of the idea that you're interested in, and then do some research on the plant themselves and see how what they need to take and what they need to grow.
And Mary, probably because she's interested in gardens similar to the ones you have, do you have at the Payne, do you have gardens that incorporate the edible plants and so forth? You do.
We do. Yeah, we have an herb garden, and we incorporate mostly herbs with some edibles in there as well. And so, with herbs and most of the herbs are mostly a lot of greens, you know, so you have to try to think about some color in there too. So edible herbs that have some color.
Yeah. And then maybe you add some other plants that are not edible, but to add different interest.
Yeah,
color.
For sure. Think about your winter interest. You know, think about how that's going to feel in the winter. Maybe you need some hard evergreens. Maybe you need some woody shrubs that will give you some winter interest when you're looking out.
And I would say the reason I mentioned Payne again was another good trip for you, Mary, would be to run over to the Payne, drive over to the Payne Center in Oshkosh. Probably any time of the year, but probably in the summer, next summer, take a trip over there and take a look and see how they're doing, how Sheila's doing their gardens.
That's
with
true.
The edible plants in mind, and get some inspiration from that. Also, the Allen Centennial Gardens in Madison have, the folks there have done quite a bit of work incorporating edible plants, some really pretty vegetables and so forth.
It's beautiful there,
yeah. Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. And so I'd also suggest a visit to some of these gardens. Mm-hmm. Allen comes to mind, and certainly the Payne Art Center and Garden comes to mind in Oshkosh. And Allen in Madison. So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wenzel and Amherst, do you have a quick question?
Yes. Our son in Bozeman, Montana, had a yard that I was wondering, we got a slug of this vinca vine here, if there'd be a way to dig up some of ours and package it and send it out to him. And I think the zone and everything, it would grow, but how do you suggest I do that?
Oh, how do you send those plants across the country? I tell you what.
Can you send them across state lines?
It may be an issue there. You'd want to be checking on that, Wenzel, and I think you're going to have a tough time doing it. What you probably ought to do, if you're going to do it, is find out first if that particular plant's okay to send it, and then secondly, I'd go to one of the garden centers in the Amherst area that actually sends plants and look at how they mail plants.
Well, you know, my parents mailed me some strawberries, and they did that. They put the roots really moist, and they wrapped the towels with moist towels.
Okay.
And then we sent them bare root.
They sent them bare root.
Yeah, and it really worked well. U.S. Postal.
U.S. Postal in a box.
In a box with moist bags, and yeah.
So there, you can do it, Wenzel. I bet you. Give it a try, but I'd check on the legalities, too. Sheila Glaske is curator of horticulture at Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Always great to have you along. We are really happy to have with us Sheila Glaske, who is the horticulture curator at the Payne Art Center and Gardens in Oshkosh. It's a gorgeously preserved historic estate with a mansion, 30,000 square foot mansion, and 20 gardens, including a formal English country garden. And so we're talking about gardens in general, but also talking about inspiration and how she perhaps finds inspiration in the landscapes that she works with, and maybe how you can find some inspiration in your own landscape. And maybe have a question about some specific plants as well. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, and you can post a photo along with your question, too, if you'd like. And Sheila, let's go back to design for a little bit. You do some designing, which I think is kind of interesting, in a couple of different areas, based on childhood memories, design based on that, and design based on feelings.
Yeah, it's some interesting techniques that I've learned and I like to share. So childhood memories, and so what you do is, I asked this guy at my work, I said, so tell me about your childhood, tell me about your garden, and he says, you know, in my backyard I had this oak tree, and we used to climb on it as children, and I said, well, you probably don't have an oak in your own yard because it's such a city, small city lot, but he goes, every now and then I go back to check on it. So there's a lot of power in your childhood memories. You know, for me, I grew up on a dairy farm over in the western part of Wisconsin, and we had these silos. And I would climb up the silos, and it would be a place where I can just view far and have that soft wind. And so in my landscape, in my home, I try to create, you know, some vertical landscaping or being on top of a hill, but yeah, creating that soft, soft wind that kind of gives you kind of relaxing feeling. So,
do you create a soft wind?
Well, you create soft winds by creating plants that capture the winds. And so, so like a lot of the grasses would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Some plants that kind of crackle as the wind goes through them. But, you know, a lot of people are in love with roses. You know, and I always wonder kind of why. They're great plants in the right place, but they're really kind of hard to grow. They have thorns, you know, they only come in certain colors,
say
overwinter, right. But what it really is that connection that they have to roses from the smell. You know, maybe their grandmother had the smell of roses. So it's interesting that we, at the Pain, we try to use a lot of our senses to kind of create a connection with our visitors. And so we use like cocoa bean mulch in our garden to kind of create that smell of chocolate. We incorporate plants that are, that have scents. So like the prairie drop seed that smells like popcorn when it's blooming.
Yeah.
We have a katsura that has like a cotton candy smell to it. So there's a lot of connections between senses and childhood memories, and you can incorporate that into your design. You know, kind of have you like a feel-good space. Now think about if you have children or grandchildren, what kind of sense do you have in your garden that then you can carry on, that they will remember? Now, Larry, I don't know about you, but when I smell a field full of cut hay,
Wonderful.
Right? Or like onions from your garden, the fresh earth and the onions from the, pull those out of your gardens. But so I think there's a lot of designing to do around that feeling, just childhood memories in itself.
Yeah, I've got to do a little more with that in my own garden. The garden that's in front of the house next to our porch, because we spend a lot of time in the summer, in particular, out on the front porch visiting with neighbors and so forth. And it's so much fun to have on that later afternoon, plants that come into their own in terms of their smells, as the day gets later, and even into the night. There's some ornamental tobacco, for example, that really have wonderful aromas, and they don't come out. I mean, that aroma doesn't release until toward evening.
Yeah, not only smells, but look at the sights and the hearing. Yeah. So we have water features in our gardens, which create that sound of water, which kind of can connect to people. And then the sight of the colors and the textures.
And the textures and the smell.
Yeah, using all your senses in your garden is important.
Well, Rocky in Marquette County has something for us, so let's go there. Rocky, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Well, I was listening, and I said, your guest was saying that you have to replant your garden every year. And that's kind of true, unless you plant things like asparagus and rhubarb and grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So you put them three things in, and you have a continual garden, although I imagine you would like to plant some other things. But those are three real good things that you don't need to replant all the time.
Yeah. Very good points, Rocky, and they could all work together in a landscape.
Well, and the texture on all three of those is pretty amazing. You know, and you get that yellowing fall of the asparagus, which would be really pretty. It's kind of used as a filler, right? Yeah. The rhubarb leaves would be a mass of planting, so that would be a nice, bold statement in the front.
And the grapes, the grapevines,
You have some winter interest there.
You get some winter interest there, and they may attract some birds.
I would think.
Could be for a variety of reasons, depending on how thick the vine branches were as a hiding place, or maybe they'd eat the grapes. Good points, Rocky. Thank you very much for calling. Well, let's go to Judy in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Hi, Judy.
Oh, good morning, Larry and Sheila. I was just intrigued by Sheila's comments about how she plans her gardens based on fabrics or clothes in the closet.
Yeah.
And I just kind of do the opposite when I'm quilting and choosing colors. I think about my garden and nature, and that helps me to plan quilt colors.
No.
But so I love that idea, Sheila, and I'm going to think about that when I plan my garden. You have given me a lot of tips. What I look at my garden, and it's just full of specimens. It's not, I don't know, I just don't have that nice flow of repeating forms and shapes. So you've given me some great ideas, especially when you talked about Googling images.
No, yeah. Great. That's great to hear. Yeah, you know, art forms are all the same. A lot of this art forms are the same. So quilting is an art form, you know, and gardeners are artists. Instead of using oil or watercolor, we use plants as our medium. So it's all the same elements. So
Yes. And you, did you have a question too, Judy?
Yes, I do. Okay, I have a really, really old rose bush. Okay, so I'm 67. This rose bush came from my grandfather's garden. And so it's very old. It has just kind of really open-type flowers, but some this past summer, no, I didn't get any blossoms. And the blossoms have been very sparse in other years. I'm just wondering, you know, is this bush petering out, or what would you suggest I do to help it to
rejuvenate
kind of reintegrate it?
Yeah, rejuvenate it a bit. What do you think?
Well, you know, I would check the soil first, I think. I would just check the soil and see what's going on with that first. And then if I would amend the soil if it needed. And it hasn't had more shade than normal. Is that right, Judy?
No, it's right out there. It's getting a lot of nice sun.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, do you cut that back in the winter or?
I have not cut it back so far. I've been kind of leaving it up just for winter interest.
Yes.
And then I chop it back to about 12 inches high in the spring.
Yeah. No, I think that's what I would suggest, too, is just to kind of chop it down and then just to fertilize the soil and make sure the soil is key. So see what's going on there first, and especially if it's been doing well for you for so many years. It's just a strange and strange deal there. Larry, do you have anything?
Well, I was thinking, you know, sometimes with flowering, if you have too much nitrogen, for as an example,
right.
But that's why a soil test would probably be a good thing.
Yeah.
If you make a little soil test and send it into the soil and plant analysis laboratory and tell them this soil comes from an area where there are roses, and what do they suggest as an amendment for soil when you have rose, when you want rose plants to produce flowers?
And should I, but you don't fertilize now, right? You just wait.
No,
spring?
I wouldn't fertilize now.
No.
Okay. But I would send in, you could send in a soil sample now, and frankly, it's not a bad time to send one in because they're not as busy now as they will be in spring. And if you get that sample now, you're going to get a pretty quick answer. But be sure to tell them that it's roses that you're after. And the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory, if you put that in Google, you'll get the address for it. And along with instructions on how to send in the materials. Does that help out, Judy?
Yes. Thank you so much for taking my call and for chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks, appreciate
Judy.
It. Sue from Stevens Point called in. You know, someone called earlier about wanting to have an edible garden, essentially, that would also serve as a pretty garden. And Sue recommends a book. It's called The Complete Book of Edible Landscaping. Rosalind Creasy, C-R-E-A-S-Y, Rosalind Creasy, is the author of that book, The Complete Book of Edible Landscaping. I have to take a note of that. Natalie, write that down, will you? So Natalie, our board producer today, might be able to write that down so that we can follow up. Maybe Rosalind Creasy would be on the show sometime. It'd be fun to have a show just on that topic, edible landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks a lot, Sue, for that suggestion. Appreciate it very much. We have Kate emailed to say she's looking for some ideas on how to freshen up her front yard landscaping, possibly a flower bed as well in her backyard. She's willing to do the work, but is in need of ideas and feeling overwhelmed about planning it on her own. Are there landscape designers out there who are willing to work on even on a smaller project? Where can she find one?
Well, you know, I would start. I'm not familiar with the whole state of Wisconsin, but
we don't know where Katie's calling for emailing from. So,
maybe the Landscape Association. I would look through that and see if there's. And you know what? The best when you find in a landscaper, the best suggestion would be to word of mouth. that's usually how you find the good ones. And you know, see if there's anybody out there that has used a landscaper before and how it all works.
If you type in Wisconsin Landscapers Association, Wisconsin Association of Landscapers, I can't remember which. We could try both of those, and one of them will pop up. And then you typically, on those sites, you get locations. So you can type in a location. Say you're in Madison, for example, or Milwaukee, and then a list of members of the association will be listed. And I always think it's not a bad idea to go with somebody who is a member of a professional association, because kind of tells me that they have done some extra extra work. They are performing to the rules and so forth of the association itself, or they wouldn't be members.
Right.
And so I always kind of like to go that way, at least at first.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Larry.
So there's something else that for Katie to kind of look at, it, and we certainly appreciate that. Peggy from Mozenie, I don't think we talked about this. She's a 30 by 50 foot area, partly shaded. She wants to landscape. It's between her driveway and her organic vegetable garden. She's wondering where to find good ideas for landscaping using native shrubs, flowers, and grasses, especially in the rural area where she lives.
You know, Peggy, I think I would start by looking at an organization called the Wild Ones. And they deal with mostly natives, and they would be a strong candidate for selecting plants. And it's a big area, 30 by 50. That's pretty big. So
yeah, that's a pretty big area.
Yeah, so shrubs are important in that landscape design just for the winter interest. But what I think I would just do Google searches, talk to people who are native enthusiasts, and try to figure out what would work best. Make sure you have an all-season garden.
You know, and the Wild Ones, oftentimes, you know, I know that group well. They're a great bunch. And if you're a member, you know, you might even be able to get some help from somebody. You might have a Wild Ones member living a mile from your house and not even know it, Peggy, and be able to get somebody to come over and take a look that way. Some of the nurseries that deal with native plants, Prairie Nursery just pops into my head.
Yeah,
Prairie Nursery, Neil DeBull, they have a lot of information right on their website.
Mm-hmm.
and so do others as well.
Their catalogs are really good resources too.
Yeah, the catalogs are wonderful resources. So those are a couple of ideas for you there. And certainly, Sheila's comment about the Wild Ones is spot on for sure. So there you go. And you can join in too. We have a little time left and time for you with your question or comment or maybe your experience to share. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us at ideas@wpr.org. We would love to hear from you. Back to roses for a minute. Do you have a lot of roses in your gardens?
You know, we have a rose garden, and we grow only hardy shrub roses in our garden, which are the easiest to maintain, right? So overwintering is pretty easy. We do mound the bottom up a little bit with some soil, and we let them kind of be their natural self through the winter. And then in the spring of the year, before the spring hits, we actually do a little pruning. Sometimes we actually wait until they start leafing out, and then we start clipping right above the green leaf.
Right above that green leaf?
Yeah. It seems to work really well. But that's only for the hardy roses.
Do you get some smell from them?
You know, probably not as much as the floribundas.
No. Or,
yeah, the tea, hybrid teas.
I was
going
to say.
yeah, but, you know, my theory in my garden is if it takes too much effort and too much work, we just have so many gardens that it doesn't belong in my garden. You know, I try to grow some disease-resistant varieties and things that, you know, people would easily grow in their own garden.
Well, I like that idea as well. And I want to go back before we might take another call here. The Payne Art Center and Gardens, there are things, if you go onto the website, there are things going on all the time at the Payne Art Center and Gardens. Right through the winter, isn't it?
All the way through the winter. It's kind of hard for me to keep track, even though I work there.
So give me an idea about things that might be coming up.
Well, so what our biggest item is a Nutcracker in the Castle. It's we do over 70 trees, decorated trees for the Christmas season, and it's in form of the Nutcracker Ballet. So we have character actors, candlelight tours. It's pretty amazing.
And when does that start?
So November 16th is when it starts, and it goes until the 1st of January.
So there's lots to go just for that alone.
Yeah. And
then any hot chocolate or anything if I stop by?
Yeah. Well, you know, we actually have a cupcake cafe where we have large pink trees hanging from the ceiling. And so we have these cupcake fairy that dances with children and hands out cupcakes and hot chocolate.
Sounds like a good time to me. Dave Potratz, our engineer, he's perking up his eyes there too a little bit, rubbing on his chin, thinking a little bit about that. That sounds great. Well, I tell you what, Diana in Wausau, we'll go to you. We got a minute or so. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a hill filled with pumpkins. And we used to throw alpaca manure and horse manure on it, and it just was overrun with these vines, which I loved, and all different kinds of pumpkins. And then a couple of years ago, there were pests who got in there. I don't know if they're rats or moles or something, and they just ate holes through all the pumpkins. And now they don't grow there anymore, and I don't know what to do to reintroduce them to the hill.
My guess is that it probably wasn't the rodents, and it could have been squirrels, because I had a squirrel just eat a pumpkin off my front porch here not long ago. It may have been something else that was causing the problems with the pumpkins, because if you were having them grow, they were and coming up from seed, from the sound of it, there may be a nutritional issue. There could be a herbicide drift issue. There could be a lot of things going on.
Yeah, like too much nitrogen.
Yeah, too much nitrogen would definitely create a problem too, in terms of, at least in terms of getting pumpkins, because if you're putting a lot of manure on every year, you may well be increasing the nitrogen levels to levels that are probably get a soil test.
Yeah, and the salts. The salts are high,
salts
too.
Salts are high, too. So get a soil test. Tell them what you have been applying, and tell them what you're growing there, and ask for some advice in terms of the soil that you have. Again, the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory can handle that. Sheila, it's been a great pleasure. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Larry. It's been fun.
Sheila Glaske, curator of horticulture at the Payne Art Center and Gardens of Oshkosh. Go online, type that into the search engine. You're going to be amazed at what you see with that castle and with those 20 gardens that they have growing there. Well, Monday we'll take a look at memoir writing, among other things. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.